you know, Tim and I do the show because we love you, but also we would like to maybe help support ourselves by getting some advertising. And in order to do that, advertisers want to know how awesome you listeners are. There's a short survey that I'd like you to take to help us learn more about our audience. Go to podsurvey.com, podsurvey.com/TV-talk-machine. It only takes about 5 minutes. We'll ask you some questions about yourself and what you like to buy. It's completely anonymous. The answers help us find advertisers that are matched to you, your interests, in the show. And when you're finished, you can enter a monthly drawing to win a $100 Amazon gift card. That's podsurvey.com/TV-talk-machine. And thank you for listening. Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine. It's episode 39. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, the chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter. It's Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason. Alive and well.
Good. We made it. You made it through the Warriors parade?
Yes, I actually watched that on TV. You know, I'm not big for crowds.
No, me neither.
No.
Crowds. I went to the first Giants parade and got a spot, like, but that was before they were just on Market Street. It's when they started on, like, one of the side streets, and I was on the side street, so I was in a fairly limited, there weren't that many people around me, and that was really good. And I was like, all right, saw a parade, never doing this again. Watch it on TV. It's great on TV.
It's the best seat in the house.
Yep.
Although you have to, like, listen to people talk about a parade. It's very difficult to talk about a parade.
No, because there's nothing to say.
No.
Do you ever watch, this is not what I expected to talk about, but do you ever watch something like the Rose Parade? Do you ever watch that?
Yes, it's disastrous.
With Bob Edwards and, or no, Bob Eubanks and Stephanie Edwards.
Yes.
I've merged them into one person, Bob Edwards. Where they, I mean, like, literally, or the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade with the cast of the Today Show.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, literally, there is nothing to say. So they write stupid things on cards that they try to make it seem interesting. But really, all it should be is just, like, natural sound of the bands playing and stuff, because there's nothing to talk about. Or I guess there's something to talk about, but so much time to fill that the ratio is completely out of whack.
Oh, completely. All they need to say is just quiet time, and then,
hey, it's Steph Curry.
Yes, look at that float.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that one looks like a BART train.
I like when they still got stuff wrong, where I was like, I am pretty sure that's Marshawn Lynch, and no one's mentioning it. He's standing right next to Draymond Green. Pretty sure that's Marshawn Lynch.
It's not on the card. Nope, not on the card. It can't be real.
Mm-mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But no, I stayed in the confines of my home.
I think that's a good call.
I don't like people, Jason. That's a thing.
That's, yeah, I'm with you there.
That's the thing.
I don't like lots of people either. Lots of confused people moving in strange ways. Just, I can't. Like, that's like shopping at the holidays. Just,
and then you add the sun to that.
You know what? Yeah, exactly. And then you're outdoors, and there's bugs in the sun.
Oh my God. Heat.
Yeah. You know what has made the holidays so much better? Amazon.
Exactly. I am with you on that. I hate to, like, be an endorser, but I do love me some Amazon.
Yeah. Hmm? Yeah, they don't do Amazon for parades, though. So, you know, you just watch that on the TV. And yeah.
Just order up some good times. Yep. Can I pay for some good times?
Good times. You can get that on Amazon Prime. Yeah. You got to wait 2 days, but it'll get there in 2 days for free shipping. You got to pay a lot extra if you want the good times that
hugs. Day. What is it? Hugs.
Yeah. Some hugs.
Box of hugs.
Yeah, don't get those from one of those unauthorized sellers, though.
No, they're always bad hugs, inappropriate.
They're like refurbished hugs.
Hugs.
You don't know where they've been.
I'm like, you know what? That's my butt right there. That's your hand is whatever. That's not even, you're not even an Amazon hug. That's not even okay.
I'm disturbed now.
Yes.
Do you have anything to say about the NBA finals before we move on to the rest of the TV talk? Since we got to the parade, the Warriors won.
I would just say, let's go Warriors.
All right.
Warriors. The Warriors came out and they played.
They did. It was very entertaining.
My reference to 70s. Movies.
Yep.
Warriors, come out and play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Reference acknowledged.
Thank you.
Hey, another big event happened. The Game of Thrones finale finally happened.
It did happen.
And you wrote a thing about it.
It was very difficult to write that thing. I find my feelings about Game of Thrones to be very complex.
You seemed a little conflicted.
I did. I think I like the show. I love the show, actually. And I watch it with anticipation every week. And yet it, I don't find it to be all that moving, because I think that it's, as I said in my review, I think its capacity to surprise is way, way, way overrated. That they've had a couple of really big surprises that are like, for a non-book reader like me, particularly the first season at the end, we all know what we're talking about. But there could be somebody who's new, and I don't want to spoil it for them, but that was a pretty big death. And then there was the Red Wedding, and then there's been very little between that that has surprised me. I think a certain someone losing a hand, that was very surprising to me. But most of the time, everything that's going to happen is telegraphed like a neon truck on a freeway. Like you can see it coming from miles away.
I'm not even sure you could classify them. I think this was some of your argument. I'm not sure you can classify them as twists. They're like they have the sense of inevitability. I feel like some people got surprised, like their brains are working. But oh, they won't do that because it's a TV show. But if you look at the storyline of some of these characters this year, one character in particular who meets the pointy end of some various stabby things at the end of this final episode. I mean, he had been heading there the whole season, right? It was this whole choice between, do I do what I know is right, or do I do what's politically expedient? And he always chooses, like his father, what's right, and he gets it in the end. And it felt very much inevitable to me, not like a twist.
No, it felt very inevitable. And the young squire who helps in his doing. How many shots of him staring at do we need? I am going to do something very bad to you.
There were
at least
two scenes that were like, hey, you remember my parents got killed by these guys, right? yes, but it'll be fine. Nothing else is said. It's like, well, that's going to go well. That's totally going to, they're just going to ignore that.
You could really spoof. I mean, I love Game of Thrones. So I'm not trying to make fun of it. You could really spoof it though. Like you could have that kid say, hey, in a couple of episodes, you and I are going to do a thing, buddy, because this is why I'm being the cameras on me right now. And I'm staring at you. That is to tell the viewers something bad between us is going to happen.
Yeah, he should have just shouted, red rum, red rum.
Well, I was a little disappointed that, and I didn't want to spill any. We're not even spilling spoilers in this. And we probably with people who already know what happened, but, I was a little disappointed that no one gave me credit for saying that the only thing that would have been surprising about this death is if it had happened by an anvil. I was pretty good. I was pretty happy about that. I mean, we saw the anvil coming, right?
I think the key question is, does the fact that this is, you know, you could say telegraphed, you could say foreshadowed, you could say, there are lots of ways you could describe this. Does it not being a twist, does that detract from the storytelling? Is that, because there are two ways to argue this. One is, well, without the twist, the show isn't anything. And the other thing is, I don't know, the inevitability, the slow motion car crash of a character meeting his demise because he refuses to compromise on his principles. That's kind of, for me, that's kind of drama. I was okay with it not being a twist. But what do you think? Does Game of Thrones have to have surprising twists in order to be effective?
No, I think that people are coming to expect that. I don't think you have to have that, but I think they have to live with the fact, just like you just said. If they do it that way, as you said, then you have to live with the fact that it's not as moving, not just shocking or surprising, but as moving as maybe it would be if you didn't see it coming. For example, when this character died, I was like, that's tough to see you bleed out on the snow there, but I saw this coming a couple of, 20, I don't know how many episodes ago, but a lot of episodes ago, this was coming. And for book readers, it's much the same, although I know the convergence is less now, and there's more divergence between the two storylines in the show and the book. So I guess some of the book readers are getting more surprises. But yeah, I just think dramatically, it doesn't have the same impact because emotionally and the rest of the story I thought was fine for the finale. I think that I thought the thing that I didn't know was coming, which was Cersei's walk of shame.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was the best part of the finale because it was, her sort of, as my late, departed mother would say, hoisted on her own petard when she was set all the machinations that she set in motion. And then she is, of course, swept up in them as well. And here she is at the last episode of the season doing this walk of shame, which is terrible. I didn't see it coming. And it's for her, it was an amazing kind of visually and dramatically, not just because she was naked. That's silly. But it was a tough scene. And I thought that was a really good scene for the finale, whereas the big scene that everybody talked about was not so good because we knew it was coming. But and as I voiced many times over, my problem with Game of Thrones is it moves too slow.
Yep.
When it moves so slow, if it had 13 instead of 10 episodes, it wouldn't have to move so slow. And because you could stretch that, those scenes could take longer. You could have these bigger scenes rather than these compacted 2 and 5 minute scenes that just jump around. Like the weird thing about the finale of the season is that Arya, her story was what I was probably most interested in at the time. And I still don't know where it is or what it is. Mm. And if you stripped everything away and covered Arya in the last 3 episodes of the season, you put all her storyline together, I'm going to guess that it's no longer than 14 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, not a lot. I mean, she's got that in the first episode where she like travels to the house and all
sure.
of that. That, uh-huh. that had the most in it. And then it's sort of like a scene every episode or so. It's funny, Arya's story is the only one I would say, having read the books, they mostly that last episode brings you to where every character is at the end of the most recently published book.
I didn't know that.
I feel like they landed right on the end of that book. Like, okay, and now there are a few stories that are ahead of the books. They've already gone past the books, but mm-hmm. almost every other cliffhanger is basically where the character was left off at the end of A Dance with Dragons. Arya's is not the case. They pulled some, I feel like they pulled some of her story forward, but her cliffhanger is where she was at the end of the 4th book. And I don't know whether that's because they want to extend her storyline a little bit more in order to, you know, I think part of their end game here is they're trying to figure out how to pace everybody's storylines. Mm-hmm. But it is funny that she ends up being kind of behind everyone else, where, you know, her going blind is how the previous book ends. And so that's a little bit strange to me. And I wonder if, you know, I wonder what's behind that and what they have planned for her next year. Because my fear is that now we're going to get more, you know, mumbly mouth House of Black and White stuff. And I really kind of wanted to see her progress. And I think her storyline this year was essentially like she goes there to be an assassin, is too caught up in her own stuff, in her own revenge. And they beat her down and say, you know, you fail at this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, start again, essentially. And so, yeah, that do we really want to sort of see her? If that's her next season story arc is just repeating the class she failed, that would be kind of boring. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with her. But she's the one that I felt it was a little strange. She's behind all everybody else is sort of like right at the edge where nobody, you know, we're all on an even keel now. Where like it's all the changes they made this season, it seems to me now, having seen the whole season, they were essentially editing the storylines in order to get them all to line up so that they could drop everybody at the end and have them like at this place, which is basically where the books end up, which is kind of cool because now, I mean, literally there's nobody with a privileged position about the story from here. They can go anywhere and we won't even know if it diverges from the books because the books aren't out.
That's as a non-book reader, I find that really interesting because I have not paid enough attention to and I've never heard anybody put it in quite that same way you just put it. So that's great. Everybody's going to be on the same page. I will just say about Arya's story, I didn't find, as you say, mealy mouth, the House of Black and White stuff, I didn't find any of that very compelling.
I know.
And I was like, okay, the many-faced god, oh my god, really? It was like, okay. This seems like it's philosophy, but it's not. And it seems like
It's like a Karate Kid for assassins kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, first you have to understand how we do what we do and that we're all in the force, you know, and it's good and evil and death and life is all what we're about here. Yeah. And it's not one of my favorite things in the books, but I feel like that you could do that story, but if you're doing that story at such a slow pace that it feels like you're just kind of stalling and that sort of, and she's such a great character that in the end, I mean, I enjoyed her exacting revenge because it was sort of the first bit of action she's done the whole season, mm-hmm. but that was it and she gets punished for it. And then who knows where we go from here.
Yeah, that was troubling, and I think that when it's doled out, like, and I didn't know any of that in the books, of course, but when it's doled out in 3 or 4 minutes, yeah. except for that first episode, as we said, going out there, yeah, I just think, okay, right, she learns a little teeny bit, step back, here she's pushing some oysters, okay, next week she's doing some more oysters, and then, whoops, I'm lost.
She's Molly Malone.
I think that you have 13 episodes, then you can tell me a longer story.
I agree.
Not cut away from so much. So that's my problem with Game of Thrones. I will say this, and this is as definitive, and I've never put this in print yet. I do think that Game of Thrones is not as great as I thought it was going to be. Let's put it in, since we have the NBA finals behind us and the NBA season, it was like a player that you thought was going to be LeBron and it ends up being more like Harrison Barnes. You know, it's like, oh, that's a very good player. He's a good looking player, but it's not the best
at what it does. Not the best in the business and not a Hall of Famer.
Right. And maybe because it's still got some time left, it'll become something else. But I think that it has been hurt by its own storytelling molasses and the length of its seasons. And I think that's come back to bite it in the ass. And for me, dramatically, it's certainly still a great, like, of the current shows on television. Yeah, it's in that top five of top tier shows, but it's not what it was going to be. It's not fulfilling its potential.
I had a couple things that I wanted to bring up that are in this vein. One of them is, I feel like this is a difficult time to judge the show because, although I actually agree with you about the narrative momentum of these 10 episodes and you just sort of get spun up and then you have to spin down again because we're done for the year. But I wonder, one, if this is second act syndrome. You know, it's sort of like the Empire Strikes Back in the Star Wars story. And it's hard to do the middle act. And even when you do it well, like something like the Empire Strikes Back, it's still dark, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you read a lot of stories about people getting turned off on the show. We got a note that we didn't read last week from Hobo Eric, who asked, you know, Legend. Is there a place that any show can go where you say I'm out with a level of violence or depravity or subject matter? I mean, I heard that a lot about Game of Thrones. I personally feel like, you know, it was very clear in season one what the show was going to be. Yes. And you know, if you signed on knowing that, you can abandon it anytime, but I generally don't have a problem with it. But I do wonder if, like, do you think this show has a shot at redemption? If they're truly setting up for 7 seasons, then it would seem like they're about to kick it into gear. It almost seems Lost-like to me, where once they got the word about how long they were gonna have on the air, they were able to actually, like, backdate from their ending and start kicking it into gear. And I kind of wonder if that's what's happening with Game of Thrones right at the end of the season. Is there, you know, now they got a plan to take it the rest of the way? Is that, you know, is there hope for that kind of redemption if they stick the landing?
Sure, but that's supposing that we're right and that it is going to go 7 seasons. I think that HBO wants it to go more.
Yep. Why not?
I think it's very clear when you get 20 million viewers that they want it to go more than 7. I think there's enough story where they can take it more than 7. And I think George R.R. Martin has said, look, there's the books and then there's the TV show. Get over it.
Right.
And I think that's hard for people because it was built on the books for so long. And then now it's like you said, it's everything from here on it surpasses the books.
Yeah, they've got it now. They can take it any direction they want, it feels like, to me.
Right. And I think that to me, that's fascinating as a storyteller. It's fascinating to be in Martin's position of, wow, you know, I'm thinking he's probably wishing that they had done 13 episodes and slowed it down a little bit.
Yep.
And because now he's like, wow, we really burned through a lot of story and now you're gonna do stuff to my characters I haven't even thought of.
Yep.
You know, and that's weird for a creator. It's like somebody like the alternative universe you know, Mad Men, where Matt Weiner doesn't get to do what he wants with Don Draper. Somebody's going to come along in the comic book version and say, oh, well, now he's actually a serial killer, or now he's a hippie, or he dies in an alley from alcohol poisoning. What? You know, yeah, I didn't decide that. So it must be strange for George Martin to be in the position he's in.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I know he's talked to them, and I think they're going to try to follow his outline, like, generally. But all the details, they're going to continue to make the decisions they've already made to go in different directions and drop whole storylines and simplify a lot of stuff and merge characters together, essentially, and say, this person's going to do this person's stuff. And
but it can happen as you describe it. I definitely think they can stick the landing, whether they do 7 or 10, because they have time left, and time allows you to get your act together and fix things. But I hope that I hope that you're right that it's a second act situation. I think the same was true with the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I mean, I love the second movie, but at the same time, you're kind of end up going nowhere, and you're spinning your wheels for the climactic third. So maybe that's happening here, and they will stick the landing. But I beyond that, I think, and it's hard to judge, right? Because they don't know what, as you're unveiling the series and you're plotting these things, you don't always know where you're going to go. It's going to change in the second or third season, and you're going to end up someplace you didn't think you were going to end up. But I think if they were to look back, they would probably do a couple of things differently, because I think that they have to know that they're mired in a little bit of a storytelling crunch, and they're kind of in molasses as far as story. They've got too many characters, they've got too many storylines, and they can't service them all.
I don't know. It feels to me like one of the things they tried to do this season was get through the source material and simplify it so that they could get free of it, because that is one of the challenges, is that all these threads are sitting there, and if they've decided which ones they're not going to pick up and they've simplified it, then they may end up having some more momentum. I mean, we'll have to see. It'll be fascinating to see, now that they're essentially free from book material, what they do. I wanted to mention, so Hobo Eric's comment here, people who want to criticize Game of Thrones this season, there are lots of reasons why. What I would say is, there are absolutely places shows can go for me, and I'm interested what you think here, where, in terms of violence, depravity, subject matter, where I would say, well, forget about it. What I would say about Game of Thrones is it has never approached that to me. I will roll my eyes, because I do think there was a scene last season, the Jaime Cersei scene, that came across as being a rape scene in exactly the wrong way. It was like, well, you know, you say no, but your eyes say yes kind of scenes. That was a huge mistake on their part. They blew it. I think they admitted that they blew it. But this season, the stuff that's there that happened that was awful, I never once felt like the show was reveling in the awfulness. It always read to me as being, these are awful things that are happening, and you should be uncomfortable because in this world, bad things happen. And that doesn't bother me. What bothers me is when a show seems to be winking at you, like, yeah, we just slashed somebody's face, or their guts came out, or we killed somebody's kid, and yeah, that's supposed to be bad, but really, isn't it cool that we did that? That's the stuff that turns me off, because that's true depravity to me, is somebody showing horrible things for your entertainment and not for your you feeling bad for the characters because it's part of a larger story that they're telling. Now, again, if Game of Thrones ends with everybody dying and everybody turns into a zombie at the end, I'm going to go, what the hell? But I'm going to give them some latitude there, because I don't feel like the awful things they show, I don't feel like they're trying to tell us that they're good or that they're cool. They are intentionally awful, bad things happening to characters to make you upset, yes, but it doesn't feel like depravity to me.
I think that, yeah, I think to answer this question, it's the essence of this show, is twofold. I agree with you that once you're winking at the violence, it becomes depraved, and I'm not on board. But I would say that nothing that I'm watching, I have a couple of caveats, but there's nothing that I'm watching in the series in this season that I wasn't taught to expect through the other episodes. And to me, there's a consistency there. And by that, I mean, is there a lot of gratuitous sex and violence and nudity that seems, and money, take the violence away, but the other stuff, is it excessive? Well, sure, it's always been excessive. That's part of the show. So if you're going to get upset about that now, or if you're going to say, okay, it's been excessive for 4 seasons and I just, wow, it's cumulatively too much, I don't think that's a good argument. It's like, that's the show. You either like it or you don't like it. But I think that the show has a couple of problems. One, I think that it's defaulting to rape scenes as to show to depict evilness.
Yeah.
And I think that there are other ways to do it, and I think when people are starting to call you out on that, then that's a storytelling crutch.
Yep.
And these are all guys who are writing this show, so that's a problem. And mm-hmm. you know, I don't read as much about these things as people who are super devoted fans, because there's just too much other stuff out there. I'm not obsessing over Game of Thrones so that I need to know what you know, Benioff and those guys say about what they're doing. I don't focus on hypersensitive stuff like that. But I will say, so they may have a reason for it. I would just say, from what I've seen, without anybody being able to explain it away, they are too much emphasis on rape as a depiction of a character being evil. That part, I think that they need to fix. The other part, and that was one of the caveats, the other part of the show that bothers me, it's not the violence, because this is a violent world, and we create these characters who do violent things. That doesn't even really bother me anymore. What gets me is when they create a character like Joffrey or Ramsay, who I think it becomes poorly written, because it's like, okay, yes, we get it. This person is terrible. This is an awful human being, and I know. So that, and if let's just use Ramsay as an example, the sort of raping Sansa and the wedding night thing. Did you need that? Because we already knew Ramsay was an awful person. He was actually cut people's skin off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we spent a whole season with, I would also say, entirely unpleasant and scenes to watch with him and Theon torturing him horribly, right?
So horribly.
It's been established. You don't need, not only does it make him more of a cardboard villain, but, you know, we get it. So did we need to have it reminded to us that this is how awful he is?
Right. And reminding us in that way, which has now become something of a calling card, which it shouldn't have to be.
Yeah.
And again, it goes back to guys writing the show. I think that's a problematic thing. If you don't have a female saying, hey, you know what, guys, we already know he's evil. Does he have to do this? And from what I understand, this is their making. It wasn't even in the books that way.
Do you know? Yeah, it was a different character.
Different character.
George R. R. Martin, I think part of his whole shtick with these books is deflating fantasy tropes that seem all romantic and showing how awful they are. So having, you know, marrying off a princess, you know, his whole point is, you know, that's rape, right? I mean, that's really what he's saying is it's systemic cultural planning of the rapes of young women by giving them as political tokens. And, you know, that I do believe that is his intent by telling the story in that way. But yeah, did you know what happened in the season finale of Outlander, by the way?
No.
It didn't get as much press, but it has a lengthy, lengthy rape scene in it, where the main male character gets raped by the bad guy from the British Army.
Wow.
And it is brutal. It is far, I would say, far more detailed and brutal than I think anything in Game of Thrones. And, you know, I had sort of the same feeling there, which is, one, it's sort of like not quite the show I signed up for in the same way that Game of Thrones was.
Right.
And I know the reasons they're doing it in terms of character and having, you know, having that be an important thing in the relationship of the two main characters of the show. But at the same time, you get to the point where you're like, yeah, okay, we already got that this guy was evil. Mm-hmm. And dwelling on this horrible thing is not, you know, it's not entertainment. And while I suppose it informs all of us by putting us all through of, you know, watching the hell that this character is going through, I think it was too much. And also, I think we're all a little sensitive now after Game of Thrones to the fact that this is just a really easy way for writers to you know, depict terrible things happening to their characters, and it's probably time to come up with some better ideas.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree on that. And you know, so again, these are also arguments that we're making when we're talking about Game of Thrones, where what they do is they detract from the greatness, and you have to view it in that lens. I think that the show is, this goes back to me saying that the show, I love the show. I think it's fun to watch for the most part when it doesn't take all these crazy detours. I like it. It's moving too slow, but it's still gripping, which is hard to write about. It's like you have all these things. I have all these things to say about it as far as like not living up to its potential and not telling the story fast enough. And yet I tune in every week. Yeah. So it's very difficult to sort of to say why. Because somebody say, well, you must love it. Well, I already said that. I do love it. But that doesn't mean I can't criticize it. And that doesn't mean it's not being the best show that it can be.
Even the – and this is something that we talked about on this week's Incomparable, actually. Even a great scene like that Hard Home scene, the 30-minute-long zombie fight scene that's just amazing, Lord of the Rings kind of caliber stuff on a TV show. But even in there, you can see some – and once you're on edge about the way that they treat women characters, you start to notice it. And like there is a – there is this really cool character of one of the women elders of the Wildings, and you get to know her, and she's really interesting, and she puts her kids on the boat. And not only do you have that moment of like, well, okay, she's going to die because that's you show the scene, it's the flag saying this person's going to die. But the way she dies is she sees some kid zombies and just stands there and lets them kill her.
Yeah.
And a real motherly instinct would be to kill the zombies so she could go back to her own kids, not just let them kill her because she's a woman and she can't kill kid zombies. It again was like in the middle of this thing that was truly amazing. I watched it twice. Mm-hmm. Still, there's a moment where you're like, come on, guys. And I feel like that is my relationship to Game of Thrones. It's like, it is totally worth watching, but it is also totally worth criticizing some of the things that they make that are missteps.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Well, it's off the air for, for 30 weeks, so 40 weeks. Oh, well.
I will say, to add a little bit of humor to close this out, is that I love it. You know, I never read comments, but people will send me emails. Not that often, because email seems almost like making a phone call these days. I got an email from somebody. It sounds like he was like a young guy. He said he's never, and there's misspellings, but your was misspelled, your and you are. He was really upset about my feelings about the character who died and not being moved by that. And he called me very, very bad words and then said, for the watch, man, for the watch. and I said, okay, so are you stabbing me on this email? Yep. Because, man, you're taking this really seriously, dude. You're so wrapped up into this show. Okay, yeah, it's fiction. But okay, for the watch. And took one for the watch. There you go.
He got stabbed by an email.
I got stabbed by a young boy, sounds like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
These kids today. I have, before we go to the listener questions and comments, I have, I can report in to you about two nerdy shows that I watched.
Excellent. I'm rubbing my, here we are. People can't see it. I'm just trying to make a sound. I'm rubbing my...
Oh, nice.
There we go. Okay. Let's hear it.
Dark Water on Sci-Fi.
Oh, yeah.
Watch that. One episode, because as I am not a TV critic, I only get to watch one episode at a time.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Dark Water. My review is I will watch a second episode. I didn't dislike it and want to turn it off. It's very kind of old school sci-fi channel kind of feel. So coming from the Stargate producers, that's not especially surprising.
Okay.
I think it wants very badly to be Firefly.
Okay.
Team of rogues on a spaceship. You know, they're all types. I was able to map many of the types to characters on Firefly, but it was okay. I'll watch another one. I'm not entirely convinced that I'll watch more than the second one, but I'm going to give it a second episode to see where they go from here. I feel like their premise, and I guess this comes from the comic book, but their premise is so fake in the sense that, let me explain this. They wake up and on the spaceship and nobody knows who they are. They have no memory of who they were in the past. They've lost their memories entirely, which is interesting as like an episode of a show, but you know they're going to figure out. And in fact, by the end of the episode, spoiler alert, they learn who they are. They don't remember, but they learn who they were. And I think to myself, that's just, you know, does that make the show better to have them learn who they are rather than just introduce these people and have them have interesting adventures and conflicts? I'm not sure whether the gimmick is is necessary or is going to necessarily even last in the show. But it was competently done. Many actors who will seem familiar because they're on all the Canadian produced TV shows.
Yes.
But I would say it was okay, and I will keep watching it until, you know, unless it turns me off entirely. But after one episode, it was not one of those, yep, I'm not watching that one. It was like, all right, that's it's a space show. And there's a cool android character on it that I actually kind of amuse. They wake up an android who tries to kill them all, and they reprogram her. And then, but she's by far the most competent person on the ship, which I kind of enjoy.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. All
right. So that's Dark Water.
Dark Water, not to be confused with Bong Water.
Nope.
Okay. So
that is a different that's story. That's a Dutch sci-fi show.
Okay. Yes. And you also saw what else?
Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell on the BBC America.
Oh, yes, as you say, Norrell.
Well, so, actually, here it's funny.
Okay.
I always said Norrell. Mr. Norrell refers to himself as Norrell, but Norrell. When he gets to London, the guy who has taken it upon himself to promote him in the press and say, oh, the great magician has come to London, this sort of PR person he didn't hire, but somehow is repping him, he refers to him as Norrell, and it leads to much laughter and amusement when every time he tries to correct how it's pronounced, the guy just completely ignores him because he's decided it's pronounced Norrell and not Norrell. That actually made me laugh.
I like that little inside joke almost.
It's really good. That's my review of it. It's really good. This is the kind of thing that I would expect from a kind of a BBC production. It's the sets are great. The out indoor and outdoor setting, setting this in the past, setting this in sometime in the 19th century, I think. It looks fantastic. The magic stuff, when it happens, again, it's sort of limited magic. And when it happens, it's surprising and kind of shocking and cool. The performances are good. It's funny and weird and yet internally consistent in this world of where magic is just sort of coming back. And the guy comes and presents himself to the prime minister, and he's like, oh, you really believe this stuff? Well, forget it, and kicks him out. I mean, it's really good. And I love that because it's a miniseries based on a novel, they know exactly how many episodes they have to go, and they know the story they're telling. And when they get to the end, they're done. So there's that too, where a whole lot of stuff happens in episode one. As opposed to other shows that we've talked about on this very podcast. So, yeah, it is. And one of the funny things, having read the book, that I like about it is in the book, it's kind of audacious in the way it tells its story, where there's this first, like, I don't know, several hundred pages that is about Mr. Norrell. And it goes so deep in the story. And then there's book two, and book two is about Jonathan Strange, and it basically rewinds and tells this whole other story with little tidbits that you glean from the first part. But it is, so in this, they're like, no, we're not going to do two episodes about one guy and then two episodes about the other guy. So they stick it all together, and it still creates some very amusing crosses where there's a character over here who pops up over there, and there's this prophecy that this guy says about there will be two magicians. He's like, no, there's only one. He's like, no, there are two, and then we see the other guy. So I like that one a lot. That one is unabashed thumbs up. I'm not gonna be one of those like, well, we'll see about the second episode, like Dark Water, Jonathan Strange, Mr. Norrell. That's a winner. It's really good.
That's a. I'm so happy to hear that because now it's an endorsement, and it's from you, who's a sci-fi person, but also somebody who's and a genre lover, but also somebody more importantly who's read the book.
Yeah,
that's important to me. So I'm gonna put that on my to watch.
You should check it out. I think I mean, the first episode, like I said, that's all I've seen, but it just the look of it and the writing is smart and the direction is good. And it's that thing of like, you know, this is the thing I think the BBC does really well. These little boutique, you know, boutique shows where we're only doing eight episodes. We're going to tell a whole story. They've gotten really good at that. And they've embraced the genre stuff. So I think the BBC is really great at doing period stuff anyway. And then you throw in a little magic on top of it. And it's really, it's really interesting. So
okay, I'm in. I'm putting that on the DVR.
So, I wanted to ask you. So HBO tells me that Ballers is coming on.
Yes.
Have you seen Ballers?
Ballers
with The Rock, starring The Rock?
Oh, this is interesting. We're at that time of year. Especially since I did the two TV festivals. But we were at that time of year where I naturally try to take a little bit of a step back and farm out some of these shows because I'm going to be doing more of that anyway because I think I do a lot of work that THR likes when I do analysis and commentary that's not just straight review. So this helps me. And it's also a period where all this stuff's coming where THR in particular is doing hundreds, it seems like hundreds, and I probably, honest to God, probably pretty close, of Emmy stories, even though Emmys haven't even been announced yet. So a lot of my effort's been going into that behind the scenes. So no, I've the short answer is I've stepped back from that, and I didn't do Ballers. We did review it for THR, and I did look on Metacritic. I think it's favorably reviewed, but not highly favorable. And there's a comparison that popped up in a couple of reviews, which worries me. It's been said more than one time that this is Ballers is kind of the sports version of Entourage.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Oh, that's troubling.
It's troubling. Troubling news on the Ballers front.
Because I did like the first season of Entourage. So yes, this is troubling. You could like the first season of Ballers, and then, but you know what? It's also there's a lot of these kind of shows. Survivor's Remorse, which is the LeBron-produced series, which is on basketball, which is really good on Stars. So there's all kinds of stuff like this out there. But I'll watch it at some point, but I have not watched it yet.
All right.
Ballers.
Ballers. Let's do some listener stuff. How about that?
Let's do that. But just quickly, I will say another one that didn't watch.
Oh, yeah.
That I'm going to watch because I farmed it out. But reviews across the board have been very good, and this is something that can sneak up on you. There's a new series. They actually bought it. It says Amazon Original Series, but they bought it from England. It's called Catastrophe. It's out now, I believe. Actually, tonight. It starts tonight on Amazon. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can see it. It's already been picked up for a second season in the UK. And it's got 82 rating out of 100 on Metacritic, which is pretty high. For example, Ballers is 64. So there's your comparison. 64 is a low ball figure on Metacritic. If you get any a little bit lower than that, you're getting into the very mediocre range rather than favorable. 82 is a very high number. So check out Catastrophe on Amazon, because I think that's one people are going to want to watch.
All right, Catastrophe. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Miss TV Fanatic sent us a link to a story on The Hollywood Reporter that is USA Network Goes Darker to Court Millennials. Mr. Robot and Complications lead a new crop of what NBC Universal Cable Chief Bonnie Hammer calls silver lining dramas as the top network says so long to its blue skies shows. Any thoughts about the USA Network seeking the silver lining and not the blue skies?
Oh my God. I wish I had read that, because I think silver lining is a terrible, terrible way to talk about darker shows. That's just
hey,
not...
they're dark, but you know, there's a silver lining.
I don't get that at all. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's silver lining. Does that mean that there's
dark clouds,
but something happens at the end that's redemptive?
Yeah, so millennials are bound together by a core group of values, the idea of perseverance, inner strength, self-confidence, and bravery, says USA President Chris McCumber, citing research. Oh, they researched the hell out of this one. He's betting they'll find such themes as standing up to power and oppression relatable as they crop up in his new batch of originals. Internally, Bonnie Hammer has dubbed the new mantra silver lining programming because the characters demonstrate at least some faith in humanity. At least some.
So, whereas we, the Sopranos generation, liked the dark characters, they have to have a little bit of faith in humanity on the other end. Oh, okay.
Speaking of which, and you got the police going by, so I hope you find the silver lining in that.
It is Oakland.
It is.
I will say this. Is that what millennials are about? I thought they were just kind of like checking out, sitting in the coffee shop, worrying about not having jobs to go to. What?
No, it turns out they're about Mr. Robot.
I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
I guess so.
And Complications on USA.
Complications was a very, very big player at the ATX festival that I was at, but I was not there because it was a USA show. I don't mean anything by that other than, oh, yeah, that is pretty low on my list. If I'm going to miss something like Catastrophe, I'm probably going to not watch a bunch of USA shows. But they're shifting from Blue Sky to Silver Lining, and I will have to catch up. I did not watch either one of those two shows. I farmed it out.
All right. Thank you, yeah. Haley from the 212 for sending me that link.
It was a silver lining.
It was.
I see that in there.
We just little update from our friend Jason Barry, who wrote in to via Twitter to just point out that Ascension is now on Netflix. So thank you, Jason.
I saw that.
Check that out.
Check. Thank you for that. I that came across my Twitter feed and I laughed. Thank you.
The tweet from listener Gary, who just points out we were talking about keeping things alive in the off season and how all the creators you talked to at the ATX Festival said, no, forget it.
Right.
Listener Gary points out Ron Moore tried that with Battlestar Galactica and he says ran into contract problems for webisodes, which I think I remember something about that. But the point is, like, if the network and the studio were committed to keeping hope alive, they would write it into the contracts, right?
I mean,
they could plan. Planning is possible. They would just have to have the will to do it. And I think that comes back to if the network and the studio lean on the producers and say, you will provide us with this material, they're probably going to say, okay, fine.
And that and the stars as well. And
right.
I think that if you're working on the old school way of doing it, the stars are not going to do anything else that they don't have to do that they're getting paid for. They're already working probably a lot of these ones, especially if they're Canadian productions or whatever. They're not getting HBO money out of it. So they're like, you know what? You want more out of me? Pay me more. But at the same time, I think that that's old school. You would have to say to them, hey, look, your show, it's not a hit yet. And until it becomes a hit, you really have to be helping us make it a hit. Once it becomes there could be something in the contract that says once you get over 3 or 4 million viewers, we won't ask you to do these webisodes anymore. Something like that can be done. There's ways around it. People are creative thinkers. Beyond that, I will say that answer did come up at ATX and people said, we don't want to do webisodes. And I said to them, I'm not talking about webisodes. No one's asking you to do an extra half hour of material if you don't want to. I get that that's probably going to run into some legal stuff and unions, et cetera, et cetera. But you have to do something.
Right.
It doesn't even have to have your fingerprints on it, but just do something. And one of the suggestions that I put out there was like, you know what I would actually watch? This was somebody sent an email or a text to me a tweet that said, what if they put like a little camera in the writer's room? And people were like, I would watch the hell out of that online. and everybody in the crowd said that they would watch that too. The people who make the show said, oh, writer's rooms are boring. And I was like, you know what? That's fine. Just, it's not about whether it's boring. If this room of people says that they'd watch it, they'll watch it. It doesn't matter. We don't know how long they'll watch it because it's not on yet. But you have to think outside of the box like that a little bit. I hate that term. But you have to think about that. And that doesn't take any time away from you or your actors. It's just people whose job it is to keep this show on the brain of your fans. That's
Right. Community did an episode where, or a couple episodes where their characters were tweeting and the tweets actually happened during the show on Twitter. And I thought you could do something like that. That's almost like performance art where it's, you know, have the writers write a script for different characters tweeting over the break and spend a day doing some photos that you're purporting to be, you know, photoshopped by the characters of things going on. And just, you know, there are so many different ways to try and keep this stuff alive in the conversation without even producing new episodes or webisodes or whatever. But
yeah, I mean, there's, in fact, one of the things that I had said, like, you could do interviews that don't need the actor to be acting. They just need to answer questions. You don't need that producer to shoot it. You can have somebody who's just your second or third unit producer or whatever do it. You don't have to, because it's not about stylized. It's not about an actual looking like the show. Any extra content, any bonus content that you can string out in the off season is a bonus that will help. So that's my point.
All right. Let's go to Chris from the 253. That is Tacoma, Washington.
Ooh, see, I was like, I don't even know what that is. That's a tough triple number.
Split 253. Off, yeah, split off from the Seattle area code, probably.
Yeah,
so Tacoma gets it. So Chris says, we've caught up to the current episodes of Wayward Pines, which we're enjoying so far. However, by the third episode, they've killed off some important characters that probably brought in viewers to the show. I kind of feel like I've been hoodwinked. Has this type of thing been done before in TV, where they get big names for a few early episodes in order to draw a larger audience? I couldn't think of any other examples.
Yes, there are. I can't think of them specifically, but yes, that's been done quite a bit.
Game actually. Of Thrones got a mm-hmm. well-known fantasy actor from the Lord of the Rings series to appear in the first season, and then mm-hmm. he doesn't make it out of there. Mm-hmm. I would also say I love it when pilots do this, where they cast a well-known actor for the pilot, and then they kill him or her in that episode.
In the pilot, yes.
So you mm-hmm. think they're the lead, and they look like they're going to be the lead. And then they kill them. I think Robert Patrick has literally been that character like five times where it's like, hey, Robert Patrick's in. Oh, he's dead.
He's dead. Yeah, that I can't pull up specifics right now because I'm not a robot. I wish I was.
Yeah.
But yes, this has actually happened numerous times where you're like, okay, this is going to be awesome because look, oh, they killed him. Wow, I didn't see that coming. And I think it also just they use that technique to say anything can happen. That's what they're setting up.
I wonder if some of this is an effect of having shows get ordered straight to series rather than, you know, we're going to buy 10 episodes of this instead of doing a pilot. Yeah. If you do a pilot, you got to put somebody in the pilot because there's no way they're going to commit to do a pilot and then maybe come back for two episodes. That doesn't work with actors' contracts and schedules. But if you get ordered, like Wayward Pines, I think got ordered straight to series.
Oh, yeah. So and then, it's only doing 10. It's
yeah.
Out.
So then you go out and you say, okay, we're going to do this show. We want you in the first three episodes. And then you can skate off again. They can do that now, but there's no way they'd say, well, we want you in one. And then if it gets picked up, we get to force you to come back for two and three, and then you leave. They can't do that. But with these shorter orders and direct to series without a pilot, they can play games like this. So we're seeing the pilot game of the Robert Patrick game expanded to full series, which is
kind of cool. I think it's I would just say that the person that question seems a little slightly tiny bit dated because yes, in the first three episodes lots of people get killed off, characters come and go, a couple of really big names go by the fourth episode, but that series in particular has already passed this point. There is two bigger reveals coming, which have already happened. If that person's coming, they'll know it. Where it changes the series in its entirety. So I actually am a fan of it. I'm going to watch all 10. I said I would do that in the review I did, but I actually watched the session that Wayward Pines did at ATX Festival, and I thought they articulated their vision very good, very well, and cleverly. And I thought, okay, I'm in. It's just 10, and it's done. They're covering all three books in 10 episodes, and then there is no plans for anything outside of that. So cool. I'm game. Yeah.
I like that. I like it when they got a plan and then mm-hmm. they execute it and then they're done.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Larry from, he's Mr. Vale in the 408.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah, OG.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He says, I binged on Sense8 last weekend and I liked it. It was good uh-huh. to see scenes filmed in the actual international locations instead of the alias treatment, right? Or the, as he says, everywhere, anywhere forests. Thank you, Ben Cooper.
Yes.
I like the distinct perspectives and sci-fi storyline, although it faltered a little at times. Like HBO, Netflix is definitely pushing the bounds of TV, nudity, sex, and more birthing scenes that I've seen in sex ed class. I still think Daredevil was better. Yes, Tim, you should watch it. But the Wachowskis definitely were given the freedom to create a unique story. So a vote for Sense8, which I've still only watched one episode of, but I am going to go through. And yes, I agree. Daredevil's good.
Yes, right. I'm going to watch Sense8 as well.
All right.
And I will finish Daredevil. There's so much, right? I haven't done Black Mirror yet either.
Oh, yeah.
And now I got Catastrophe to catch up on.
It's times of confusion. That's what I'm saying. Times of confusion.
And here's the thing.
Confusion and delay.
You've caused confusion and delay. God, Sir Topham Hatt. I love him so great. but I will say this. I was one of the first people who, you know, well, all the critics got the chance to watch at the same time. But we came out like on the deadline, on the embargo deadline of my Orange is the New Black review, where I watched the first four episodes. And now it's already out. So people have already gone through the whole season. I'm still at four because I've never gone back because I have other things to review. So it's kind of funny now. I said, oh, here's what it's going to be like. And then now pretty much everybody's like, finished it, dude.
Well, we've got just time for a couple quick ones that'll end on a high. And if I didn't read your letter, we can't read all the letters, but please send them out. I'll give you the numbers right now. Post them on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. Tweet at us at TVTM. Tim is at Bastard Machine. I'm at Jay Snell. And you can also send us an email to podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. And those will get to us too.
And in our defense, I will say we neither one of us, neither Jason nor I, thought we would sort of get into a big Game of Thrones discussion.
No, we did. We didn't. That went.
But it happens, and that's what's good about
it. Once a year, good to have that talk.
Yep.
People listening to the Incomparable Network will have heard me have that talk three times this week. But if you want to know more, if you can't get enough Game of Thrones talk, not only is there this weekend's Incomparable episode, but I did episode by episode breakdowns after the episodes aired on. So go to theincomparable.com and look at the TV podcast, and they're all broken down there, all 10 of them. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's it's like Sepp and Wally in effort, but in podcast form because I'm lazy. Okay. Last two. Alan in the 415, or for the international, because we do release simultaneously around the world internationally, the +1 415. Thank you, Alan. says, thanks for recommending giving Parks and Rec a second chance. I had bailed on it a few episodes into season one. This happens to everybody, Alan.
Yes.
When it first came out, I just finished binging it, starting with season two, and it was delightful. Don't watch season one of Parks and Rec. Just don't do it. Start with season two.
Start with season two. It's very easy to do it that way. Yeah.
And it's so good. Such a good show. But they didn't know what they were doing the first. They got it a little bit wrong. It was a little too much like The Office, and then they fixed it.
They did indeed.
Yeah, if you like Chris Pratt, especially don't watch the first season because you will hate him in the first season. He's awful. And then they realized how great Chris Pratt was, and they made him not awful, and it's much better.
It's kind of funny how that worked out, huh?
Yeah. Funny. Yeah. Now he's a big star, big movie star.
One of the biggest movie stars on the planet right now.
And the last one comes from the anonymous-ish Twitter person, The Bottle Episode is their name.
Oh.
And it just says...
And who doesn't love a bottle episode?
Who doesn't?
I love a bottle episode.
I've recently discovered TVTM and am binging them to try to catch up. I'm currently on episode 7. So what I want to say to The Bottle Episode is, congratulations, you've made it to episode 39 now. If it isn't the summer of 2015, you got a long way to go. If it is the summer of 2015, you're getting very close to being caught up. So good luck. Keep on binging until you reach the end, The Bottle Episode. That's it.
We need to send a tweet out to The Bottle Episode that says you are mentioned in a future episode. But not which one.
Just keep listening.
You'll get to it.
Yeah, because I mean, I could send them a perk up, keep on going, keep on pushing. You'll get there eventually to The Bottle Episode right here, but The Bottle Episode is not going to hear it because they're 32 episodes behind.
And like Andy Sarah. She's proven that if you binge it, you'll end up insane, right? I think she literally went insane.
We don't. While we encourage the simultaneous international consumption of the TV Talk Machine upon release, I think we have to legally recommend that you consult your doctor before you binge listen to this entire podcast.
Oh, there's definitely a medical warning there, and we're going to put Indy Sarah's picture up where she was smiling and bubbly, and then now she's
dead now.
Funny farm. Yeah. Really lost it.
Yeah. Funny. Oh, did they tell you they sent her to a farm upstate? Yeah. I'm not sure if that's true. She may be dead now. We don't know. She can't speak. We know that.
She's gone to a place where the sound of our voice drives her insane.
But the good news is, Bottle Episode, you just recently listened to an episode where we gave a recipe. So, we're pretty much riding high now because we had that great recipe.
Okay, good. That's awesome.
Yeah, you can get some of that bacon, the CSI Cyber Bacon Frittata. So enjoy that while you're listening to these future episodes. Okay, Tim, I think we've reached the end. We should probably say goodbye now.
We're out of air.
Yeah, the oxygen has left the room again. We'll see everybody next week. Tim, pleasure as always.
All righty. Talk to you later.
Goodbye, everybody.